The Mutual Broadcasting System presents STRAT, Strategic Risk Assessment Talk with retired Marine Intelligence Officer Lieutenant Colonel Hal Kempfer. Now, here's Hal.
Welcome to STRAT. Welcome to Strategic Risk Assessment Talk. As you can tell from the background, I am on the road right now, but I'm going to address to you something that's kind of been burbling in the background. I don't know if burble is the right phrase, but probably fits. It's what's happening with oil and the price and supply of oil and how that not only impacts, you know, us in the U.S. and North America, but is having an enormous impact on Russia, Iran, Cuba, and even China. And I got to try and break some of this down. I don't have a strong central thesis where I say this is where the world's going to go. But what I am doing is I'm saying we need to kind of recognize where the world is going right now, because there's a lot of things happening and something really big is happening. The United States is effectively orchestrating worldwide the price of oil, and it has enormous strategic implications. Now, this week, as I'm recording this, prices have kind of moved up a little bit. They've edged up as investors are worried about escalating tensions between Iran and the U.S. and potential supply disruptions. By the way, I should mention, kind of in the background of everything the U.S. is doing with oil, is that massive oil field, the Bakken Shale and the Three Forks Formation in North Dakota, Montana. The very significant sources of oil for the United States. They're domestically produced. So whatever we do as a matter of national policy, we have to keep this critical production area in mind. I've personally been up there. I spent there. I've looked over those fields, associated critical infrastructure, albeit with a little bit different eye. I was looking at it from a security perspective. And the Bakken Shale is one of the largest oil accumulations in the world. It's huge. But as it kind of implies, it's shale oil. All right, it's not sitting there liquid in the ground, it's in shale form. And the price of oil to keep these fields going needs to be between about $55 to $60 a barrel. Okay, I just want to put that out there because that's a consideration that U.S. policymakers have whenever we do stuff. I should also mention up front that a simple way to understand oil spot prices is by breaking down the meaning of a complex term that we hear all the time, like Brent crude oil spot price. Brent is basically a type of oil blend, as opposed to another type of oil blend, for example, WTI, which means West Texas Intermediate. Crude oil, well, obviously, that's the asset that's being bought or sold, and crude oil kind of implies oil with minimal processing. Spot price is whatever it's going for buying and selling at any given time. And when you see a price tag named Brent crude spot price, it refers to the current price of Brent blend crude oil, which is a very, very common. And when you talk about Iran, that is the oil that comes out of Iran. So that's just kind of an idea of what it is. And the spot price indicates the cost at which Brent crude oil can be bought or sold at any given time. With all that said, Brent crude oil futures are right now just a little bit under $70 a barrel, okay? If I'm sitting up in eastern Montana, I'd be going, great, keep pumping the shale out there. West Texas or WTI, West Texas Intermediate, is a little bit below $65 a barrel. And both benchmarks have been settling a little bit higher this week, mostly about concerns about Iran. Now, this week, President Trump met with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. They reached, quote, no definitive agreement, unquote, on how to move forward with Iran. But President Trump insisted that negotiations will continue. It's really not clear where those negotiations will go because Iran just wants to talk about nuclear and avoid any discussion about its proxies all over the Middle East and around the world, and also avoiding a discussion about its ballistic missiles. So that's a big issue for the U.S. that we want to get into that. It's a huge issue that Israel wants us to get into that. So anyway, those are going. All right. What this means is that the threat of another armed conflict with Iran that could have significant impact on the oil market is very real. Now, it's not just Iranian oil we're talking about. We also have to talk about that critical Strait of Hormuz for the Persian Gulf. About 25% of the internationally shipped oil in the world goes through the Strait of Hormuz. Iran is right there. They got anti-ship missiles. They got drones. They got small boats. They got all sorts of things. They could cause a lot of havoc and disruption in the Strait of Hormuz. So that's another thing that all the market's looking at. All right. I kind of hope I broke this down a little bit, but it does get a little confusing. So let's leave that alone. All right. So that's overall putting pressure on keeping oil prices higher. Now, contrast that with what's happening in Russia with Russian oil. They've literally got dozens of tankers full of oil floating around at sea with no buyers. And you're probably scratching your head and saying, well, how could that be? It's because of what's happening with those tankers. It's because of what's happening around the world. And it's also the threat of sanctions, and not just sanctions, more importantly, tariffs on countries that buy Russian oil. Western powers are now finally getting enough gumption, and the U.S. is part of this, to actually see some of those aging, dilapidated tankers that have been moving sanctioned crude, whether that's Russian crude, Iranian crude, whatever. We're actually going out there. We're stopping tankers. The Brits are stopping tankers. The Indians have started stopping tankers. That's all pretty big. So those ships are a little nervous about where to go. And we've also seen that as they move through some congested waterways, like in the Baltics, that some of the nations there have been stopping tankers for various different reasons, not necessarily because they're just carrying sanctioned crude, but for various other things. So what this means is that buyers of Russian oil are demanding a very steep discount compared to going global prices. And this is a steeper discount than it was even at the beginning of the war in Ukraine. What this spells is crunch time for Moscow. All right. And it's really taking that revenue that they need for their economic engine. Now, the West has tried to squeeze Putin since he invaded Ukraine in February 22. He's successfully avoided these sanctions. They used to ship a lot of oil and gas to Europe. They still send some, not as much. Europe's trying to get away from that. They found new buyers with India and China. China is definitely buying. India, that's a different story. All right. So that's all starting to change. There's a real fresh wave of pressure coming. There's a combination of European sanctions against specific ships in particular, these dramatic ship seizures that are taking place on the high seas. President Trump putting a wedge between Russia and India. This is kind of an interesting thing. After saying, oh, no, we're not going to be pressured into where we have to buy our oil and all this stuff. Well, they just turned around and said, nope, we're going to quit buying our oil from Russia, which is a real dent in the revenue portfolio that Russia's getting from selling oil. And then they went out there and actually stopped some sanctioned tankers out in the Indian Ocean, which I thought was just amazing. So India has really turned around in how they're looking at this. And all of these efforts have really left the Russian oil industry in a rather precarious state. Their main crude is actually known as Urals. That's the name they use there for theirs. Their crude sells for about $45 a barrel. And you're probably saying, well, wait a minute. That's a lot less. Yes, that's right. Brent crude sells for about $25 more than what theirs sells at. And there are lots of reports that Urals oil has been selling for as low as $25 a barrel. That's a huge reduction in what they're getting. What this means is that Russia's state revenues from taxing oil have really fallen. They got about $5.1 billion in January. All right. That's a drop from December, where it was $7.6 billion. And then if you go to the January of 2025, well, they were selling $14.5 billion net oil, which is another way of saying they're plummeting in terms of oil sales, and their revenue is plummeting in terms of oil sales. And so this is putting real pressure on the Kremlin to come up with some sort of deal on Ukraine, which they don't want to do. And also remember that we sanctioned last November their two biggest oil companies, Rosneft and Lukoil. So those companies are having to dramatically restructure, do a whole bunch of things. just to kind of create the facade necessary to do some sort of business in the marketplace out there. So what this means is anybody who buys Russian oil or sells Russian oil risks, you know, from all these sanction regimes getting cut off from the U.S. dominated banking system. And for any legitimate multinational business, that's a huge, huge concern. All right. On top of that, the EU this month, just a few weeks or last month, just a few weeks ago, began banning fuel made from Russian crude, meaning it could no longer buy gasoline or diesel or something that had been refined from Russian crude oil anywhere in the world. And Ursula von der Leyen, who is the head of the European Union Commission, has basically proposed a ban on shipping services for all Russian oil. In other words, long story short, Russia is having a very tough time financing this war with oil because of all these things. They're really going after what in some ways some would say is the lifeblood of their war machine, which is its oil. And it's their ability to sell oil. That's the revenue they get. Okay, so let's leave that one aside. You're seeing what's happening with Russia. Cuba is having some issues. Now, in 2023, Cuba imported approximately 55,000 plus barrels of oil per day from Venezuela, which account for about 8% of Venezuela's total production. Now, this figure has fluctuated. I think in May of 24, they imported about 70,000 barrels per day, so a little bit of an increase. Well, the U.S. has cut off all that oil support after they ousted Maduro. Now, in the short run, Mexico stepped in and said, we will keep shipping all this oil and we'll make up that shortfall for Cuba, shortfall for Cuba as their main supplier. A lot of back and forth between Washington and Mexico City on this. Mexico City saying, you know, that we are a sovereign country. We can sell our oil to whoever we want to sell to. And President Trump basically saying, yeah, well, we can also tariff you as we'd like to as well. And lo and behold, Mexico has now said, nope, we're not selling any more oil to Cuba. And that has brought fuel imports to the island down to zero. First time that's happened in well over 10 years. It's so bad that Russian planes just announced that they will not be taking anybody to Cuba. They will only be picking up Russians from Cuba to bring them back. The reason why is they don't want to fly heavy going down there because they're going to have a tough time refueling. And there's not that many places where Russian planes can refuel between Russia and Cuba. Keep in mind, there's a lot of sanctions out there. There's a lot of things, you know, those planes could land and then somebody could go in and seize those planes and hold them and they may not take off. So basically, all Russia is doing is basically evacuating its people from Cuba right now. Russia's talking about sending oil to Cuba. I don't know if that's going to happen or how much they can send to Cuba, but they might make some effort because they do have some extra oil. Keep in mind, though, Russia is so desperate for revenue, they're going to want something significant. And that's just what Cuba does not have is hard capital to pay for that or really a whole lot that Russia might want. There are some things they do want, but we'll see how much that is. Now, both China and Cuba said, hey, we're going to step in and provide humanitarian aid to Cuba. We're going to help them with a variety of different things. I don't know what that's going to turn out to be. There's a lot of skepticism about that. But with the threat of tariffs so heavy, it really does look like nobody's going to be replacing that oil going into Cuba anytime soon. And hence, there is an active discourse internationally about Cuba could be facing regime change. As the economy sputters out and collapses, what's going to happen? So that's another way of saying the Venezuela thing has really had some second and third order effects all around the world. And let me take it now to China. Okay. One thing China's done the last few years is they've really built a reliance on very cheap discounted crude oil from Russia, Iran, and Venezuela for all the reasons you can possibly imagine. That oil was cheap, and they built a reliance on that cheap oil. Now, as Western sanctions on Venezuela were dramatically curtailing its oil exports, China said, well, fine, we'll buy more oil from Iran. And now, of course, we have the situation with Iran, which puts that in there. But at one time, 80% of Venezuela's oil exports were going to China at a discount rate. By the way, a lot of that oil was going from Venezuela up to Cuba, where it'd be cross-decked or transshipped into another tanker that would then go to China. And so that Cuban thing's been cut off. So basically, China's looking at, they're not getting any Venezuelan oil anytime soon, although the U.S. did make an exception and sold some of that Venezuelan oil to China. Now, China needs oil. It's the second largest country in the world by population. It's got over 300 million passenger cars. It is the world's second largest consumer of oil. They imported in 2024 about 11.1 billion barrels of oil, million barrels of crude oil per day, and they produced themselves about 4.3 million barrels per day. So you, as you can see, what they produce is not nearly enough to provide what they need in terms of crude oil in the country. And China has taken full advantage of cheap oil from these, quote, pariah states, all right? And these have been sanctioned and for various violations of international laws. And you're seeing the U.S. has stepped in heavily with Venezuela. It's stepping in heavily with Iran. And of course, you saw everything that they were doing to affect the availability of oil, and Europe is doing with the availability for Russia. So bottom line is China's kind of sitting in a little precarious situation as well in terms of access for oil. And that Brent crude they were getting from oil from Russia was selling, you know, well below the going Brent price. Iranian crude was selling well below, and Venezuelan crude, I think, was selling almost, 20-some dollars below the going price. So that gives you an idea of just how low that oil was, how much less China was paying for that oil across the board. And so bottom line is, this is a big, big issue for China. So what does this mean? Well, China's been reliant on cheap crude sources for quite some time. Venezuela's been checked. Iran faces potential economic collapse, regime change, whatever. Russia economy is really sputtering in a big way, and Russia is really moving quickly to try and figure out how do they do this. I should also mention that right now, because of some production problems and because of the Venezuela thing, Iran is basically drawing down on its stores of oil in order to meet demand. So at some point, all that stored oil will be gone, which will put them in a more precarious situation even then. It may take a while, but it could happen. And so this is really changing things. So what does this mean? Well, first off, I'm not making bets on timing for any of these regimes to suddenly collapse. However, I wasn't making bets back in 1989 to 1991. And like many others at the time, I was stunned how quickly the Warsaw Pact fell apart, and then the Soviet Union disappeared, and Russia was left. That was very, very fast. So I kind of keep that in mind. I also keep in mind, like, the early teens that we saw with the Arab Spring and what happened in Libya and what happened in Egypt, that things can change very quickly. So that's something that we have to consider with all these countries. And if all that happens, if it does happen, you can imagine what position this puts China in. So it is, I'm not a futurist. Well, maybe a little bit, but I will say this. This is a fascinating thing. And what's really fascinating is, unlike the oil embargo of 1973, where basically the U.S. was, you know, in some ways, one could say, well, we helped Israel, so therefore, you know, we got hit with that embargo. This is one. Well, we're clearly in the driver's seat on this. We have actually shaped this oil situation worldwide, and the implications of what this has for various economies is truly stunning. And the implications this has for a variety of things, not just the oil market, but everything tied to the oil market, is something we need to be aware of. So this is very different. And this is something that's been kind of burbling up. I've been watching this thing. I feel like, you know, I feel like Jed Clampett when it's like burbling up here, but it is. It's something that just seems to be getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and it's all based on the price of oil and the availability of oil, and it is really putting phenomenal pressure on China, and it's putting Russia in a more and more difficult situation, and I do find that particular strategy rather interesting, and we'll see where this ends up. Hey, thanks for listening to Strat. Thanks for taking some time. please visit stratpodcast.com. You can always go to my YouTube channel, Hal Kiempfert TV, and you can always go to GRIPSA.com. That's GRIPSA.com. That's for Global Risk Intelligence and Planning. And hope you get a chance to listen to the next one.
Strat Strategic Risk Assessment Talk with Hal Kiempfert is presented by the Mutual Broadcasting System and is always accessible at stratpodcast.com, as well as most leading podcast portals, including Apple, Spotify, and YouTube. For more of Hal Kiempfert's current events media appearances, please visit halkiempferttv.com. Be sure to like and subscribe to Strat at your favorite podcast provider.